The Battle for Liberty, Episode 16.
This is the Battle for Liberty.
All right, welcome back to another episode of The Battle for Liberty. Once again, I am your host, Mike Tilden. Thanks so much for joining me today. Pleased you've tuned in to listen. I'd like to welcome you back to the podcast dedicated to the journey of the libertarian novice. As always, I gotta remind you, you should be subscribed to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. In that way, you don't ever have to remember to check for a new episode. Every time there's a new episode, it will automatically show up in your feed, download to your phone, whatever. If you can do one better than subscribing, it would be to tell a friend about the show. Find someone in your life who you think is ready to hear the message of libertarianism, liberty, freedom, and smaller government. Give them the link, which as always is battleforliberty.com. They can check everything out at the website, and then once they're hooked, I'll work on getting them subscribed. So you just send them the website, battleforliberty.com, and I will do the rest. But you should also be following me on Twitter. If you're not following me on Twitter, I question your mental capacities at this point. I have to be honest. My Twitter account is fun. It's funny. You'll enjoy it. So just go on over to Twitter and follow the username MyBattleLiberty. And if you don't like any of that stuff, if you're an old fuddy-duddy, which is okay, you can send me an email at mike@battleforliberty.com. If you're new to the show, you need to understand that for every show that we do, we have what's called a show notes page. And the show notes page is simply a website that you can go to get references for everything we've talked about. So you don't ever have to search for anything. If I talk about an article, it's going to be right there on the show notes page, and they're really easy to remember. This is the 16th episode of The Battle for Liberty, and so our show notes page will be battleforliberty.com/16. Okay, so that's the website you go to if you want to check me on anything, which you should be doing, by the way. If you've learned anything, especially from that episode that was all about questioning everything, you should be questioning everything I tell you, checking up on it yourself and kind of comparing it to how you view everything that I've talked about. So you can go on over there, battleforliberty.com/16, and you'll get everything you need. All right, so we're going to jump right into what we're going to talk about today. Currently, as I record this episode, it's November 11th, 2016, so 3 days after the Donald Trump election as the next president of the United States, and the fallout continues, let me tell you. Liberals and progressives are still just going absolutely nutty. I really thought it would die down by now. I thought maybe, you know, they'd blow off some steam, get it out of their system, but they are still going strong. So apparently I was wrong about that too. I was wrong about Trump getting elected, and I was wrong that the leftists would calm down after a couple days. The absurdity is just, is everywhere. It's actually fairly funny to watch when you go on Twitter or Facebook or, any websites, or even just walk around, you know, any place that's full of liberals. I live somewhat close to Boulder, and I kind of want to just go walk around, Boulder and see what, everyone's up to, but that would require me driving down into Boulder, which I don't like to do, so I'm not gonna. The first thing I want to talk about today is something that's been in the news, and it's related to the election, and it has to do with the CEO of a company called Grubhub. And apparently, I've read it all, and it's absolutely true. The CEO of this company, Grubhub, threatened to fire, or asked for resignations, is more appropriate, from anyone who works for him who disagrees with his stance on Donald Trump, which is a little shocking and really just not a nice thing to do. And before we get, we're going to cover this in depth because I have a number of things to say about this. I think it's related to libertarianism. Before we get into it deeply, though, I just want to prepare you. I'm going to analyze this on two different levels. Okay, the first level is going to be an analysis that's based on kind of a common decency type angle and how I think that adults of good character should or shouldn't act. And on that level, I'm also going to cover how the company itself responded to what the CEO said. But then I'm going to move on to another level of analysis, and that's going to be much more focused on libertarianism, because again, the purpose of this show is to educate people who might not be fully aware of how a libertarian would approach various different issues. Okay, so two different levels we're going to look at here. Like I said, the first one has to do with just common decency. So if you're wondering what Grubhub is, it's a company that provides online food ordering and delivery services. It's actually, I think, a fairly cool idea. When I went to college, there was a service in my area that was like Grubhub. It wasn't exactly the same, but it did the same thing, right? Like if you have a restaurant that you really, really like, but they don't provide delivery services, it's not cost efficient for that restaurant to deliver their food. Like, you know, any local pizza place is going to deliver, but you know, what about the local Indian restaurant or the, you know, the local Thai place? A lot of those don't deliver. And so these companies started to pop up to fill this market need of, you know, there are consumers out there who want their food delivered, but there are companies that don't deliver. So these companies pop up and they provide those services. And Grubhub is one of those companies. Well, apparently, what I've learned is that the CEO of Grubhub, his name is Matt Maloney, must be just a raging leftist, because on Wednesday morning after Donald Trump was elected, he sent an email out to the entire company in an apparent effort to coddle and reassure and make his employees feel better, because apparently they just can't live and work in a world as normal adults like everybody else. And this is the part really that I think that's not getting any attention. I mean, why did he have to send that email at all? He's essentially telling his employees that he doesn't think they're grown up enough to handle the loss of their candidate in a presidential election. He's also assuming that everyone that works in his company is upset about Donald Trump winning, which the arrogance of those two things is just mind-boggling. It's typical leftist mentality, is that he is the smart father figure. You are not capable. You cannot take care of yourself. And so you must think the way that he does. And because he's upset, you must also be upset. That's the assumption. And it's just raging arrogance. And, you know, I see a story like this and part of my brain goes, how did we get to this point? And unfortunately, I know exactly how we got to this point. It has everything to do with the fact that we have allowed government to replace our authority figures and our comfort zones, right? More and more, the government is seen as the entity that will make things all better. They will make your life better. They will take care of you. They will hold you when you're scared. They will cover you when you're cold. This is the mentality that, unfortunately, I think the majority of the country now has. But you know what, Matty boy, I have some news for you. I think it's likely that the vast majority of your employees are actually not whiny little children who implode when their political candidate loses an election. See, they're all employed. So I have a feeling they're probably able to deal with this much better than you assume. Sure, now some of them might be disappointed, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I personally think Hillary Clinton would have been an absolute disaster. I dislike her for her personality. I dislike her policies. I dislike everything she stands for politically. But I don't fault anybody for liking her. You know, if someone wanted to like and follow her and vote for her, that's fine. So some of these people might be disappointed. That's okay. I understand that. You know, I was disappointed when Barack Obama got elected. I mean, you've heard me talk numerous times on this show about how back in 2008, especially, and a little bit still in 2012, you know, I was really part of the Republicans versus Democrat system, and the Democrats were not you know, that was not my horse in the race. My horse was the Republicans. And so when the Republicans lost in 08 and in 2012, I was upset. That's to be expected. If you buy in to the political system and you love the election process and voting in general and your candidate loses, you're going to be disappointed. I understand that. So I think probably some of this this guy, Matt Maloney, some of his employees are probably disappointed. But I'm actually also going to venture a guess that, you know, most of his employees are probably a little pissed at him right now for making them look like they're just balls of waste curled up in the fetal position. So, you know, congratulations, first and foremost, Matt, on publicly shaming your employees and basically calling them a bunch of ninnies. That's really what you did. But it gets better. So let's actually go through what he said in the email. So the email is available online, and I'm providing the link at the show notes page. So please go to the show notes page, battleforliberty.com/16, and then click on the link for this so you can read it for yourself. But the pertinent part I want to point out here, and it'll become apparent why it's relevant. So this is part of the email. He says, remember, this is the day after the election. And he says, I absolutely reject the nationalist, anti-immigrant, and hateful politics of Donald Trump. And then later in the email, the very next paragraph, he says, if you do not agree with this statement, then please reply to this email with your resignation because you have no place here. End quote. Now, I don't know about you, but that sounds to me like he's asking his employees who have differing viewpoints to tender their resignations. That's pretty much exactly what he said. And that's how most people took it. That's how the story broke. That's how everyone interpreted it. And here's where it gets better. In a monumental effort to backpedal, the company released a second statement the next day because, of course, they got all this backlash. And oh, by the way, their stock is tanking right now. So basically their statement, it's written in pretty language and it's written in a way, they're trying to cover up what they're saying, but what they're actually saying shines through like a bright star. What they're saying is, no, you idiots, it wasn't that the CEO wrote something vile and distasteful. It's that you morons are too stupid to understand what he actually said. That's the message. When you read this response, that's the message. And I'm actually going to read the entire response so that you can understand. So here's the response that came the day after he asked his employees to resign. It says, this year's presidential election was undoubtedly divisive and left many of our employees feeling concerned. In response, I wrote a company-wide email that was intended to advocate for inclusion and tolerance, regardless of political affiliation, during this time of transition for our country. Some of my statements in my email have been misconstrued. I want to clarify that I did not ask for anyone to resign if they voted for Trump. I would never make such a demand. To the contrary, the message of this email is that we do not tolerate discriminatory activity or hateful commentary in the workplace, and that we will stand up for our employees. Grubhub welcomes and accepts employees with all political beliefs, no matter who they voted for in this or any election. We do not discriminate on the basis of someone's principles or political or other beliefs. I deeply respect the right of all citizens to vote for the candidate of their choice. In fact, I offered extra flexibility on Tuesday and encouraged all our employees to go vote. There is a place for all points of view at Grubhub. We value diverse perspectives and believe those perspectives help to create a better product and a better workplace culture. Grubhub's leadership team has worked for years to create a culture of support and inclusiveness. I firmly believe that we must bring together different perspectives to continue innovating. We are better, faster, and stronger together, and so is America. End quote. That's the response. Notice how he threw in stronger together there? Clearly still virtue signaling that don't worry, he's one of the tolerant ones because he thinks we're stronger together, which of course is Hillary Clinton's tagline. So aside from that email, the second email, the response saying that basically you were too dumb to understand the original email, which to me is just, it's just the wrong way to deal with this. Let's say that you did make a mistake. You stepped in it, right? You don't know what to do. Here's what you do. It's pretty, people are actually fairly forgiving. You come out and you say, with no uncertainty, hey, this was wrong. I was wrong. I said something I shouldn't have said. It came from a place of emotion, and I should not lead by emotion. I should lead by rational thought. So I apologize. And I promise you, I will do better next time. And that's it. Leave it at that. Don't blame the reader. This is what he's doing. He, you know, the second email basically said, you're just too stupid. You didn't get it. So aside from that glaring fact, there is actually another major problem with the response. And it's actually a really simple problem. It's full of bull, you know what. Let's go ahead and take a look at the relevant part again. So this is the second email. He says, quote, I wrote a company-wide email that was intended to advocate for inclusion and tolerance, regardless of political affiliation, end quote. That's an outright lie. In the original email, he blatantly made judgments about Trump's policies, and he labeled Trump's policies as anti-immigrant and hateful. Matt, that's your interpretation of those policies. That may not be the interpretation of some of your employees. So no, you are not intending to advocate for inclusion and tolerance. To the contrary, you're actually mandating intolerance and exclusion. Exclusion of opinions that differ from yours. You were shaming your employees for their political beliefs. That flies in the face of the next day explanation that you tried to give to save your butt, to save your job, and to save your company. So no, I'm not buying it, okay? That's one way to look at this, but I think it actually is a lot deeper. It gets a little bit more interesting because all over the internet, conservatives are almost acting as if they've been triggered themselves. They're calling for boycotts of Grubhub. They're claiming their employees' First Amendment rights have been infringed upon. And when I see something like that, I go, wait a minute, Republicans. Whoa, slow down there. Let me see if I can understand your point. Republicans spend countless hours giving lip service to how they believe that corporations are nothing more than groups of people and should be treated like people for the purposes of taxation, freedom of speech, political contributions, etc. Okay, I agree. I think that's sound reasoning. I agree with that. But then, the minute a company like Grubhub does something that Republicans don't like, they want the government to step in and use force to enact their beliefs. Well, how are you going to do that with the, you know, so-called small government that you're always talking about? This is why I'm so happy to have a political philosophy that is 100% consistent. Here's how a libertarian should approach this. Okay, this is, as I talked about earlier, this is analysis number two now. We're looking at this from a libertarian perspective. Aside from the ridiculousness that we've already talked about, here's how we should approach this as libertarians. No matter how appalled we might be by Grubhub's stance on the election, we should always remember that freedom of association includes the right to hire and fire whomever you wish, for whatever reason you wish, even if that reason is distasteful to you. So, the owners of Grubhub should be allowed to be distasteful and fire whomever they want for whatever reason they want. This is in perfect alignment with the message of liberty and with freedom of association. If you don't want businesses to be forced to hire a certain amount of minorities to fill a quota, then you must also defend a company's right to terminate any employee they want, regardless of whether or not the reason aligns with your wishes. You know, like I said just a little bit earlier, I did see people all over the internet going nuts about how the First Amendment was being violated. And that's just such ignorance. Folks, remember, there's ignorance in every corner of the world, including liberals, conservatives, libertarians, anarchists, everyone. So let's just remember, the First Amendment applies only to the federal government, just like all of the other amendments in the Bill of Rights. So as long as the federal government isn't infringing on these Grubhub employees' right to their freedom of speech, then the First Amendment is completely and totally irrelevant. Okay, so then we have to ask ourselves, you know, what do we do with this, right? With all the vitriol that's in the air, what can we as libertarians do? And personally, I think that the stage has been perfectly set for us to try to explain to everyone that something that we've known for a very long time, and that is that smaller, less powerful governments tend to serve the needs of the people far better than large and powerful ones. See, the message should be, it's not that Trump got elected, right? That's, everyone think, liberals think they're upset because Trump got elected. I'm telling you, that's not why they're pissed. They're pissed because Trump has power, right? It's a big difference, right? They cannot believe that someone like Donald Trump has all of this power coming his way. So you have to ask yourself, or we have to help them ask themselves, where does that power come from? Where, you know, why is it that Trump is going to have so much power? Well, it comes from a long history of usurpations by the executive branch that have gone completely unchecked and unchallenged. Leftists didn't seem to care when it was Barack Obama unilaterally using his pen and his phone to make sweeping unconstitutional changes, right? They didn't mind because he was enacting their will. But at the time, we warned them that one day, that power that they bestowed upon their savior could one day be used by a ruler from another ideological camp, and that they would hate it. And so, of course, here we are today. We have arrived at the day that represents that warning. So the message to leftists has got to be this. If you finally understand that the problem isn't who occupies the office, but rather how much power is granted to the office in the first place, then we can come together and do everything we can to metaphorically and possibly physically castrate the federal government and return power to our localities. In that way, if leftists in California want to enact single-payer healthcare, or allow illegal immigrants to receive in-state college tuition, or even make college tuition completely free, they can do that, as long as they don't try to make conservatives or libertarians in, say, I don't know, Nebraska, pay for it, right? And so that brings me to my next topic, which is the recent interest in secession that's been floating around the left coast, or I guess as the cool kids are calling it, Calexit. Is that, I don't know how to say, is it Calexit or Calexit? I don't know. But it's so interesting that secession has become a topic. You know, it's how appropriate that the leftists are suddenly finding, they're suddenly discovering the notion that secession might not actually be racist, right? Now, because they are thinking about secession, well, now it's not racist. But before, when, you know, it was just a crazy slave-wanting Republicans, then it was racist. It's almost as if they finally understand that when different groups of people who have different ideologies and values are forced to live within a coercive union, the solution to the injustice of that coercion isn't to force ideas or values onto a subjugated minority, but rather to end the union altogether and allow those separate groups to go their separate ways without bloodshed. Amazing, right? Like, this is what we've been talking about all along, and it never hit home because they were blinded by the notion that anyone who wants secession must be a neo-Confederate and they must want slavery back, right? It's just such a ridiculous argument. You know, so now the tables have turned, and leftists, they're finally in a position to see the logic behind a peaceful separation. And although some libertarians, myself included, might favor ultimately a form of government that is so small that each individual only has the power to govern himself or herself, I don't think it's a bad thing to take this or any opportunity to help political adversaries, centralizers, statists, to help them take a few steps in the direction of smaller government, to help them see that this is the way. This is the one solution that solves everybody's problems. That peaceful separation or secession is truly the way to go. And before we talk about it anymore, let's hear a quick message about a special offer. I want to take a minute to tell you a little bit about Tom Wood's Liberty Classroom. If you've ever gotten into a debate with your friends or your family over politics or economics, and you find you have to give up halfway in because you just don't have the right information, well, I've got a great recommendation for you. Tom's program, Liberty Classroom, it's awesome. He's created an incredible resource from which you can learn the history and economics that you just weren't taught in school or anywhere else. It's the absolute best resource available for budding libertarians. The courses at this website include things like the U.S. Constitution, Austrian economics, Keynesianism, the best and the worst of the US presidents, logic, and tons of history. So far, they offer 17 complete courses taught by real professors who I trust, and these are not your social justice warrior academics. So if you're ready for this college-level education for just a fraction of the price, roughly 24 cents a day, head on over to battleforliberty.com/classroom and sign up. And as a special bonus, if you decide to sign up between Friday, November 25th and Monday, November 28th, so this is Black Friday time, if you want a special Black Friday deal, make sure to sign up between Friday the 25th of November and Monday the 28th of November. And if you do that, I will give you a free gift from me to you, free shipping. You pay nothing extra just for signing up through my link. Okay? If you sign up for a basic membership, you're going to get an awesome voluntarism bumper sticker. If you sign up for a basic plus membership, you're going to get a Rothbardian t-shirt, right, with good old Murray's face right on the front of that t-shirt. And if you go the distance and sign up for a master membership, it's the best one you can get. I'm going to give you the t-shirt, the bumper sticker, and a $25 Visa gift card. So make sure you want your free stuff. Everybody likes free stuff. Make sure to go to battleforliberty.com/classroom between Friday the 25th of November and Monday the 28th of November. All right, so we were discussing the idea of secession and why it's relevant to some of the feelings that leftists are having, especially in California, after the election of Donald Trump. And I want to reference an article over at the Foundation for Economic Education by Ryan Miller. He's got a great article about secession this week. He makes a great case for why secession should not only be an option, but should be preferred. In the article, he employs a pretty commonly used analogy to compare the breakup of the federal union to the breakup of, say, a failed marriage. So I'm going to read you a couple passages from it, and then I'll link to it on the show notes page. One of the relevant sections starts, and it says, "Sometimes in a relationship, you just need to go your separate ways. Sometimes it gets to the point where you lose the joy that brought you together, and maintaining the relationship becomes a hellish ordeal. If you try to duke it out for too long, resentment builds. Resentment will eventually turn to hate. At this point, when just sheer momentum is holding you together and nothing more, all you experience is pain. It's not you, it's me." And then later in the article, he talks about a lot of things in the article, so you should go read it. But later in the article, he continues. He says, "And like a romantic relationship gone sour, a forced betrothal to the hundreds of millions around us is the principal cause of society's problems. Unable to go our separate ways from people we don't like or who we don't agree with, resentment starts to build. And as we see, particularly with the current election, that resentment eventually turns to hate." Boy, he's just nailing it. I mean, he's putting his finger on this perfectly. This is precisely what's happening. We have various different groups who believe many, many different things. Another thing, and I'm not going to link to this because I didn't think about saving it, but it's just coming to my mind now. Another person put on Twitter something that I couldn't disagree with more. It was about, we've come to the moment when we finally are in two completely different camps. And that's just so incorrect. If you take any time to study the history of the United States, you would understand that we have been a union of multiple different groups of ideologies, separated loosely by geography. You know, you have your ultra extreme leftists on the coasts, whether it's the Eastern coast, particularly in the Northeast, and then again on the West coast. And then you have more conservative type people, in the Deep South. There's a bunch of these different groups. So to think that this is the first time that we've been divided is just wrong. It ignores the fact that the founders knew from day one that we have multiple different ideologies throughout this union. And the reason they set up the notion of states' rights, and the states being the principal governors of this union, was so that each region's interests could be properly respected. And so, as we talked about in the last episode, number 15, Just one more sign of that nod towards states' rights was the Electoral College, right? It was put into place specifically so that we would never get to a place where a geographic minority, although population they may be the majority, but a geographic minority could not handcuff the entirety of the rest of the union. That's why we have states' rights. That's why we have the Electoral College. So Ryan Miller is nailing it in this article. He's on point 100%. In the article, he continues. He says, "Sometimes you just need to say, hey, you're a good person, and I wish you the best, but I just feel like I need to go my own way. Again, it's not you, it's me." What is the point of forcibly binding together people who never see eye to eye on anything and who have a relationship that is increasingly spilling over into pure, open hatred? End quote. Well, Ryan, all I can say is it's a great question. It's a great question I've been asking myself for several years. It's a great question I've been thinking about ever since I read the book, Is Davis a Traitor? And I highly recommend that book. I'm going to link to it on the show notes page. Mike Church wonderfully brought that book back from the dead. In that book, you will see. So you need to understand that after the Civil War, after the Southern states failed secession, after they were hammered back into place coercively by the Northern Army, people started to ask, well, Jefferson Davis, who was the elected president of the Confederate States, was he a traitor or was secession legal? And so the book was written by a guy back in the 1860s named Albert Taylor Bledsoe. And the book is basically a defense of Jefferson Davis. So as the book's title suggests, was Davis a traitor? The book is meant to answer that question, and it is the most comprehensive answer to that question you will ever find. So I highly recommend that you read it. It will show you that secession was perfectly legal. In fact, it was always thought to the founders and to generations after the founders that we would eventually get to a moment in U.S., in the progression of the United States, where the division would just become too much, and that the answer to that, just as the answer was this in the American Revolution, but that the answer to that problem would be to peacefully separate, go our separate ways, and allow each region to govern itself in the way that it sees fit. And of course, this is precisely in line with what the American Revolution was all about. So I tip my hat to Ryan Miller over at the Foundation for Economic Education. I think the essay was great. I think it was perfectly timed, and I think it's very relevant to what's going on right now. So as I said in the previous episode, you know, California, it seems to me like a lot of people in California are hanging this secession thing over the heads of their fellow countrymen as if to say, well, you know, you made us mad, so we're going to stomp our feet and secede. And they think that most people are going to say, no, you can't do that. Well, as libertarians, at least, I think we should say, yes, California, if you wish to secede, you should. If you wish to govern yourself, we think that's a great thing. If we can take away power from the federal government and give it to Californians, we absolutely should. That's where it belongs. And it sets the precedent that if Coloradans want to do the same thing, we can sure do the same thing. If Iowans want to do it, great. If Floridians want to do it, great. If Pennsylvanians want to do it, great. A lot of people have the thought, though, that the problem with this mentality is that the minute one state does it, you're going to have 50 secessions and you're going to have 50 nations. Well, first of all, that wouldn't be altogether that bad. But second of all, that wouldn't happen. There would be many, many states that either do not wish to leave the United States, or if they do, they would simply leave the United States and band together with some states close around them. But in either way, every single political division that would eventually come into being would be large enough and strong enough to defend itself and govern itself. That's always the biggest complaint is, well, we have to have the United States stay exactly as it is in order to continue being the superpower that it is. And I don't agree. I think that, you know, that organizations throughout the world, throughout history, have shown that you do not have to be forcibly attached to another political subdivision in order to band together for purposes of defense. You don't. It does not have to be that way. So that's my analysis of the aftermath of the election over the last couple of days. I hope that it's been a help for you. You know, keep your eyes out there on Twitter and Facebook for articles that you think or current events that you think relate to libertarianism. Send them my way to mike@battleforliberty.com or on Twitter @mybattleliberty. I'd be happy to analyze them and turn them into a podcast episode. So that's going to do it for this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and on Stitcher, and please refer that friend. Spread the word about the battle for liberty. You'd be doing me a huge, huge favor. Until next time, battle on.